sitting there and watching myself is not a comfortable thing for me to do. And what I realized at that point was is that I'm a flawed human being like every single person. I stutter at times. I don't use proper English at times. I'm dyslexic. I'm ADD. And I hit bad shots. And if people don't like me for that, I'm okay with that. But what I'm going to be is I'm going to be genuine. I'm going to be what I am. I'm going to fail and I'm going to embrace it. And I'm going to say things and I'm going to make mistakes and I'm going to embrace all of them. And as long as my mistakes don't harm anybody, all they may do is harm me, I'm okay with that. And what I found was that everybody else was the exact same way. And people reached out and they said to me, you know, what we love is that you're just an approachable, down-to-earth, normal guy who just happens to be teaching golf on television. And that's really the way I approach it.
Welcome to the Mod Golf Podcast, where we speak with the influencers, disruptors, entrepreneurs, and innovators who are shaping the future of golf. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. If you're new to the Mod Golf Podcast, thank you for joining us. And please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or on our show page, www.mod.golf. So that you'll never miss the latest engaging story with my amazing guests. And I want to take a moment here to welcome our Season 4 sponsor partners. We are excited and proud to have Golf Tech as our title sponsor, along with supporting sponsors Fairway IQ, British Columbia Golf, and Nextlinks. Without their generous support, the Mod Golf Podcast wouldn't be able to bring you these unique golf innovation stories. Golf Tech is pleased to exclusively offer our Mod Golf Podcast listeners $50 off both swing evaluation and Tech Fit custom club fitting. So go to golftech.com/modgolf to book at one of the Golf Tech Improvement Centers located near you. That's golftech.com/modgolf to begin your golf improvement journey. All right, so let's get on with this week's show. I'm your host, Colin Weston, and today my guest is Michael Breed, who is one of the most passionate, engaged, and energetic entrepreneurs that I've had the pleasure of meeting. Michael hosts the New Breed of Golf radio show 5 times a week on SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio, along with being Golf Digest Chief Digital Instructor, operating the Michael Breed Golf Academy at Trump Golf Links at Ferry Point. And, gotta take my breath here, Michael, if that wasn't enough already, Michael tirelessly tours the continent as an inspirational golf instruction keynote speaker. Michael is an entrepreneur and innovator in the truest sense of these words, and it is my absolute pleasure to have him on the Mod Golf Podcast. So, Michael, thanks so much for joining me today on the Mod Golf Podcast, and as you love to say, let's do this.
Colin, it's a pleasure to finally be able to work this out. You and I have worked hard to and spent some time trying to make dates work, and I've been wanting to do this for months now, so I'm excited to be with you and appreciate you asking me on.
Oh, well, thank you, Michael. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, I think I hustle and I'm busy, but you make me look like an absolute slacker. You are a very busy man, and we're going to dig into this, how you manage to juggle all this and actually still stay fit and sane while we do this. But to start off, I do want to mention, I had the pleasure of meeting you, about 4 months ago or so in Vancouver at a PGA event where you were the keynote speaker.
Yeah.
And I was hosting the event. And I had to say, your energy level and your pure, unfiltered love for what you do, Michael, is off the charts. So it's infectious. You inspire me. So, hey, to get us started here, Michael, can you tell us a bit about yourself growing up and how you first got into golf?
You know, so I was an athlete growing up as an athlete, not very academically inclined. In fact, I have dyslexia, which basically means that you're going to have some hurdles when it comes to trying to figure out how to get grades, and particularly in the English space, reading and writing, things like that were very, very difficult for me. Fortunately, the athletics were something that, as difficult as the academics were, sports were quite the opposite. They were easy. I'm completely ambidextrous and grew up throwing a baseball, both lefty and righty, and the same with a football. So as a pitcher and a quarterback, being able to throw with either hand was something that was obviously quite unique, and it allowed for certain things in a baseball space. It's like having an extra pitcher on the team. When I was 13 years of age, in a baseball game, I slid into second base and ran into one of the player's spikes, and it basically broke off a bone in the corner of my knee. And I was, for about a year, unable to put weight on my left leg.
Right.
And so, needless to say, that took me out of all the sports that I had grown up playing, football, basketball, baseball, all the standard sports in the U.S. that you would play. And I didn't have anything to do except I could swim. And I was trying to figure out, well, what could I do? And along came golf. And I was able to stand on one leg and swing a golf club. And so that's when I started to play the game, not because I loved the game, but because I loved sports and I loved being outside. And this was the only thing that I could do other than swim. Fast forward, I played baseball through high school and then played into college. And in the fall of my freshman year in college, and I went to a small Division III program, but I played in the fall of my freshman year, I played 4 baseball games, 3 golf matches, and 3 tennis matches. And at that point, I thought to myself, you know what, I've got to find something that I can do and something that I can do not just through college, but past college. And that's really when I started to get into golf. When I was in college, I worked as a summer job cutting trees down. And I would get up very early in the morning, as I'm sure you probably can imagine. And I would go over to this, there was this place where I grew up that had 2 football fields back to back. And I would go up there and I would hit balls from 5:30 to 7:30 in the morning and then go work. And then when I got done work at 4 o'clock, I would go back to that same place at 5 o'clock and I would do the same thing until about 8 o'clock at night. And I did that for a whole summer and I went from a 20 handicap to a 3 handicap. And I got to be pretty good and then just kind of continued the passion for the game. Found out that I was a pretty good player, but not a great player. And I played some events on what was then the Hogan Tour. It's now the Web.com Tour. I played Hogan Tour events and then found out on that Hogan Tour that I was good enough to be on the tour, but not good enough to make a living.
Right.
And you realize at some point, you know what? It's a job. You got to find something to do. And all those hours of hitting balls and trying to figure out a golf swing, I fell in love with the idea of trying to decipher and figure out the golf swing. And at that point as well, through my life, I had always been somebody that wanted to help people. I'm a psychology major out of Randolph-Macon College. And just the idea of helping people solve whatever problems they may have in their life was something that made sense to me. And so the combination of the game of golf and the desire for better in life, it was all pointing me into this space of teach people how to play golf. And
right.
Boy, what a gift the game has provided me, as I know you feel the same way. This game has been an amazing part of my life and now a part of my family's life. And I feel very fortunate to have discovered it or have it discover me, however you want to say it.
What I love about this story as an entrepreneur, and I do work with a lot of entrepreneurs in the startup space, and having them realize these opportunities that present themselves, rather than looking at them as limitations, which you've done through their challenge with dyslexia and then blowing out your knee there, then seeing, a couple of doors may close, but that actually allows me to focus and push other doors down and just barge right through them. And Michael, I got to say, you barge through these doors with a smile on your face and an energy like I've never seen, sir. So with that, I want to hear, were you actually self-taught then?
Yeah.
What did you use? Because this is pre-internet days. We're both going to age ourselves here. How did you get your knowledge so you didn't develop, as I have to say I did, a bad golf swing, which I then had to unlearn very painfully? Early on, how did you learn how to swing the club correctly?
So it's a funny thing. What I've also learned through time is that there are people that are spatial learners and analytical learners, visual learners, and I'm a visual learner. And so one of the things that I found through time, not necessarily through taking lessons, although I did take lessons, it wasn't something that once a week I was getting a golf lesson or in a clinic or anything like that. It was more just watching people hit golf balls and trying to figure out what they did. And that was, I'm not embarrassed to tell you, many, many nights up till 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning, watching on a VHS and running back, rewinding and playing in slow motion and frame by frame and understanding what people were doing. And as much as I thought I understood it, I didn't understand it. And then I had the great fortune of 2 unique job opportunities. One was going to go work down at Augusta National. And when I went down there to work in the business, I found people that were passionate about the golf swing and were inquisitive about the golf swing, and they shared their knowledge of that golf swing with me. And then I worked, after working at Augusta National, I went to go work for a guy named Daryl Kessner, who's at a club called Deepdale down here in Manhasset, New York. Daryl is a phenomenal teacher, but also a phenomenal player. And he was incredibly gracious with his time as I worked for him for 4 years and learned the use of video cameras and how how to analyze a golf swing and see cause and effect. And then just again, through reading a bunch of books and going to seminars, immersing myself in the educational programs that the PGA of America has done. As you're aware of what happens with PGA of Canada, there's a lot of really smart people when it comes to a golf swing. And one of the key things for me was having an open mind and knowing that, like martial arts, there are a lot of different ways for people to do something. The golf swing is no different. When you go along and you show this passion and this desire to understand something and you run into people who have shared the exact same thing, they are so willing to share their knowledge with you, not just in a written form, but also with their time. And so I would go and I would watch other teachers teach, and I would just do everything that I could do to try to figure out what was the most efficient way to help people play better golf and also to help me play better golf. And those two jobs at Augusta National and Deepdale were really the things that allowed me to take the step from what some people would say a normal golf pro to that elite tier that I kind of feel really fortunate to be considered to be a part of.
Well, you certainly are part of that tier. Of course, in 2012, you were named the PGA Instructor of the Year, and congratulations on that. And that is very well deserved for all the hard work you put in and the support and passion you have for the game. You said something very interesting there, Michael, about sharing and putting yourself out there. And I've seen that firsthand. If you didn't have a flight to catch from Vancouver, I think you would have stayed there and as long as people possibly wanted you to, and you just kept giving back. I can see that you live this, that the more you give, the more you get back, and it does come back to you, without getting too much into karma about this, but you fully embrace that. And I can see that the world has given back to you many times of all the energy that you put out there. And we thank you for that. It's fantastic. It really is.
You know, Colin, it's a funny thing. You know this as well as anybody. We are all the creation of those that come into our lives or that we ask to come into our lives. And as we effort to be whatever it is we want to be, whether it's a golf pro or somebody that builds stone walls, as we effort to be the very best we can be and surround ourselves with those people, it tends to happen. We ask about key moments in one's life. One of those key moments came to me when I was 17 years of age. I was sitting in my uncle's house talking to my uncle one day, very early in the morning. My uncle, who was a very, very good attorney, said to me, "Michael, I don't care what you do with your life, as long as you try to be the very best you can be." He said, "If you want to be a janitor, if that's what your passion is, and you have the cleanest hallways and the cleanest bathrooms, and you treat people with respect, and you continue to try to improve upon your skills, you will always be successful." And it was a very enlightening thing for me, particularly because of my inability to perform in the classroom. You're starting to look around and go, "Well, what am I going to do with my life?" Well, that one moment in my life was the thing that allowed me to pursue what I pursue and to continue to pursue it with the passion of, I want to try to be the very best that I can possibly be. And I feel like as I start to get better at what I'm doing, I start to find out just how much there is to know. And I kind of feel like there's so much to do. I will never, ever achieve what I want to achieve. And to that point of being in that room with those very talented golf professionals up there in Vancouver, you're 100% correct. That the last thing I wanted to do was get on that flight. What I wanted to do was I wanted to hang out with those individuals and not just share my knowledge, but gain their knowledge. That room, as you're well aware, was filled with incredibly smart people that are so passionate about helping people play better golf. We're all in this the same way. We're trying to do all we can do to grow the game of golf, to help people perform better when they're on the golf course. And when you have like-minded thinkers, what you tend to do is you tend to have a place where you want to be. Removing yourself from that environment is very, very difficult. And it was a very difficult flight to get on, but I was very grateful to meet those people. And many of them have become friends of mine, and we stay in touch and share knowledge just the same. And it continues to evolve for all of us.
What great advice from your uncle there when you were a teenager. That definitely sounds like it set the foundation for you for the trajectory that you then were placed upon and continue on. And there's lots of ways I can actually go in this conversation because I'm really excited about the opportunities here. But I do want to drill down here. Let's focus. I think you and I both, we have got to say no.
Yeah.
Both have focus issues.
We've been both given the same gift, Colin. We're ADD.
But one thing I wanted to touch on there, you did talk about listening, and that is a skill, and it's something that can be learned, and the power of that. And so few people do it. And I have to say, me doing this podcast, it's allowed me to improve my listening skills, because now I have to. And you learn so much from other people. I'm sure you've heard this one too, Michael, that says, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
That's exactly, yeah, that's exactly right. Move rooms. That's exactly right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, hey, I want to shift gears a little bit here, Michael.
Okay.
I want to hear about your entrepreneurial backdrop. Once you finished up on the Hogan Tour and you realized, well, what's next for me? It seems, and I know you a bit now, and I even know what you're doing now that we're going to get into, that there's more in the future. You can't wait to see around the corner of what the next thing could be, and that excites you. So can you tell us, because to start off as an entrepreneur, and you really did this at a time where it's not like now where you've got all these incubators and everything that I'm involved in, that startup culture is so vibrant and prevalent. What gave you the courage and the motivation to then put yourself out there and realize, this is what I want to do? Here are the gaps and the opportunities and pain points, as we see as entrepreneurs, that I'm going to create something. And perhaps you can touch on the Golf Fix and the long journey of getting that going from idea to actually getting on the air.
Yeah.
So can you tell us about your entrepreneurial journey there, Michael?
Yeah. So it obviously starts with who I was surrounded with. And my mother and father were both very entrepreneurial people. My mother married my father, which was not uncommon. She's 81 now. She married my father when she was 19. My father has passed away. She was a person when she got married who was in college. She had just started college at age 19. She got married. She left college. That was a common thing. And they started this family. There's four children in this family, including me. And my father was an investment advisor, and he started his own company doing this without much of anything. He started in New York City doing this job. My mother was raising kids, stay-at-home mom, didn't have a college degree. I watched her do these things that she did. She started a thing called the Fresh Air Fund, which was a way to bring underprivileged youth from the cities out to the country. And we spent many, many summers doing things like that. Then I watched her as we got a little bit older. She decided she wanted to get into the political space. Again, having no college degree, she got into the political space and became mayor of the town that we grew up in. And then after she did that, she decided she was going to go back to college and got a degree, graduated magna cum laude or whatever it is, and then decided that she was going to go to law school and she was going to defend abused and battered women and children.
Right.
So she went to Pace University Law School and graduated again with some outstanding degree, and then got into doing that job. All the while, my dad was doing his entrepreneurial stuff. And my parents, they all believed that you have to put yourself out there. And the things that you fail at are the things that are the learning parts of the game. So that's where it all kind of started for me. And quite frankly, for all my siblings, both of my brothers have done entrepreneurial things. My sister has done the same thing. And while she was raising kids, she was teaching at Georgetown. We grew up in this environment. So it started there. And then you read a bunch of books and you talk to a bunch of people. And while I've never met the man, John Maxwell is a guy who, through his books, has had a profound effect on my life. And one of the most important books that I've read was a book called Thinking for a Change. In that book, he talks about spending quiet time or time alone with a notebook and write down certain things. And so I started doing that and eventually found my way into all these different things by writing down these different notes of things that I wanted to achieve and things that I wanted to do. And then looking at where the world was going to be in 5 years. And my thought process in all this stuff is, I've been given this gift, this opportunity, and this first down, this head start. How do I maintain that? What are the things that the world is doing going forward? How is it changing? And here we sit with a podcast, you up in Canada, me in the US, and yet we're able to create something that 50 years ago, this wasn't even possible. What does it look like in 50 years from now? How does the world look? And so what I have through these books and these people, these, it's hard to call them mentors, even though they are there. I haven't met John Maxwell or John Gordon or John Wooden or all these other people, Malcolm Gladwell, people that are real deep thinkers, right, great thinkers. They've had an influence on my life. And so by doing these different things, you kind of end up in these spaces where you go, I want to try this. I want to try that. I want to see if this can work. How can I make this a little bit better? And through great fortune and understanding this idea that one of the other books that Maxwell wrote, which was very important for me, was Failing Forward. The idea that failure was a necessary thing for me to be able to be successful in what I was doing, and that it wasn't actually failure, it was experience. And there's this great quote that I have, which is, experience is what you get when you don't get what you want. And it's such a great quote because we all want something and you don't always get what you want. But if you look at it as experience, that this is the bridge to getting what you want. You just couldn't cross it yet. So now we continue to build this bridge. And then all of a sudden, one day, through all those failed experiences, we then get what we want. And so for me, failure is, I love failure because that's when I'm going to learn my most. If I don't fail, then it's back to that thing that you said before, you're the smartest person in the room. I don't want to be the smartest person in the room. I want to fail. I want to look like, wait, I don't understand. I want to chase. I want to understand the inquiring right. mind. I want to be that mind. That's what I want to be. And I want to be around people like yourself who have that same sort of, okay, it's not failure, it's experience.
Sounds like with Maxwell, maybe, I don't know if Maxwell was quoting Mick Jagger or was the other way around, but you can't always get what you want. But if you try sometime, you get what you need.
That's exactly right. Yep, exactly right.
So, hey, tell us, so our listeners here can understand here, Michael, and most of them, if not all of them, should know the great work you did with the Golf Fix on the Golf Channel.
Yeah.
Can you tell that story of that?
Sure.
And I love this because as entrepreneurs also, you touched on this and said it in a slightly different way, is you shouldn't look at someone when they say no, meaning no. Quite often it just means not yet.
Yeah.
And I tell this to entrepreneurs all the time, whether it's with investors or even partners or mentors or even actually potential staff. It's like, it's not no, it's just not yet.
Yeah.
So can you tell us the story of the Golf Fix, how that came in your mind, the vision, yeah. and that very long, many years story of for you to actually get that on air?
To your point, that's right. You can't spell no without using not now. So I use no as not now because they both have no in it. It just means it's not now. It will be.
Right.
I was in a golf shop one day watching an instructional show and I was bored watching it. And I thought to myself, if this is the way we're trying to grow the game of golf, we have to be able to do something. There's got to be another way to do it. And so I went about trying to acquire the skill to be able to do that. So I started writing an instructional column in a local paper. Then after doing that for a couple of years, I reached out to a radio show and said, hey, I want to do a radio show. The guy said, no problem, as long as you bring advertising. So I brought advertising. And again, these are the great fortunes. You go to somebody and you go, this is what I want to try to do. And somebody goes, you know what, Michael, I'll support you in that. And very grateful as you are at the start of the show, I hear you read Golf Tech's assist with allowing you to do, you know what, if it wasn't for Golf Tech, you might not be able to do this and you might not be able to grow the game of golf the way I know that you're trying to do it. And so we all have great fortune, right? And when I do this radio program, all of a sudden now I'm starting to hone a skill. And then I go to a local television network and say, how about if you let me do some 3-4 minute tips on your Friday night news broadcast? This network happened to be close to where I was at this club. And so I start doing that for a couple of years and the whole thing kind of leads to one another and all with this idea that I'm going to start my own instructional program. And so I chase this down. We come up with the show. It's called A New Breed of Golf. This is going back way, way long ago before what exists now. And then I start chasing this thing. And then fortune walks through my door. There's a gentleman who used to be a very good player who was struggling a bit, comes in and takes a golf lesson from me. He played golf at Wake Forest, hadn't broken 80 in almost 6 years. And he stumbles upon me. And after the third lesson, he goes out and he shoots 69. And he says, I'm aware of all the things that you're doing. We need to get you on Golf Channel. He reaches out to Golf Channel and he is able to convince a former roommate of his at Wake Forest, who's involved with Golf Channel at the time, to have me come on. Meanwhile, this idea for this instructional show that I've had, we've shot a pilot and done a bunch of things, but we haven't gotten it to where we want to get it to. And I do this thing with Golf Channel during the 1999 Masters, where they had just added a first cut of rough. And I predicted that a European was going to win the tournament. And just luckily, Jose Maria Olazabal goes out there and wins the tournament. And I go from basically a no name to an overnight success. And they bring me back on Sunday of Masters after Olazabal has won. Why did you think that he was going to win? And I go through the whole thing. And then they asked me to do some on-course commentary. And then about 3 years into doing some stuff for Golf Channel, at that point, they come to me and they ask me for any ideas that I have. And I present them with the show that I've been working on, A New Breed of Golf. And it's a 10-minute pilot. They sit there and they watch it. And they go, you know what, Michael? I'd be tired. If I watched this for an hour, I'd be tired. Well, that particular DVD sits in a guy's desk for 6 years. And all of a sudden, 6 years later, that DVD is pulled out of the drawer when somebody's looking for a new instructional talent. And they show him this and that guy sees it and he goes, that's my guy. And they call me up and say, hey, this is what we're thinking. We'd like to come up and talk to you about it. And they come up in September of 2008 and they meet with me. We figure out how to put it all together. And in 2009, start the Golf Fix, and it was an amazing success and has been just an amazing gift in my life and allowed me really to do all the different things that I'm doing now because of that one very, very fortunate opportunity.
Thank you for sharing that story. I love that story. And for all the aspiring entrepreneurs out there and the people in the startup space, whether you're in golf or other industries, we have lots of people in the audience that just love the entrepreneurial journeys that our golf innovators share here. Just take that to heart. You just have to keep going here. And sometimes you need to, it's not a straight line. And Michael, you have not lived a straight line. And sometimes you need to do a side hustle. Sometimes you need to learn more things that you don't even know you need to learn in order to get to that place. And it could be a year or 2 years or five. But ultimately, you will get there. And in the meantime, you do other things that help propel you forward also. Absolutely. You've certainly done that. And it is inspiring, once again, what you've done. We're going to take a short break from my conversation with Michael Breed to hear another inspiring story from our good friends over at Golf Tech. So I'm talking to Golf Tech's first ever coach, Ty Walker. So Ty, you've been with Golf Tech for over 20 years. You must have some incredible stories. Can you tell our listeners about the longest student that you've had?
Sure, it's been a fun span of time with Golf Tech for over two decades, but one of the students that's been with me the whole time is Bo Moorhead. He's a great guy, he's passionate about golf, and he keeps coming for lessons, and we have great conversations at every lesson, just getting caught up on golf and what's going on in our own lives. But he's been with me for 20 years. His game has always been a good game, and he's won multiple club championships at his local club, which is always exciting for the teacher to hear about him brag about some of his victories. Victories and match play and stroke play championships.
So over the 20 years, who's the youngest student and the oldest student that you've ever had the pleasure of teaching, Ty?
You know, that's a good question, Colin. I currently teach a gentleman that's 81 years old. His name is Pete Egan. I probably had someone a little older than him, but since it's current, I get to teach him every week. And we've gone from not hitting the ball over 100 yards to getting it to carry over 115 yards. And it's fun for me to kind of restore his game. It's hard to change the body at that age, but all we are really trying to do is improve the contact and solid flight that he gets from hitting the ball in the center of the club. So I'd put him as my octogenarian. And the youngest, we started with Maddie. She was 6 years old. That's about where the attention span can last for the 30-minute golf lesson. Now, that'd be probably the youngest student that we started with Golf Tech. Those would be my age ranges.
So it sounds like Golf Tech is for everyone at every stage of their golf experience, from Maddie all the way up to Pete. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair to say. And I think early on, Golf Tech had the rap that, hey, we used all this technology. We were advanced for only really the better player. And that's really not the case. I'd much rather take a 20, 30 handicap and make them learn a couple new shots, improve their dynamics in their golf swing. That 5 handicap, they already know how to play golf. They have to usually get out of their own way mentally, maybe fix a little bit of their game. But the real joy for a lot of our coaches is taking that 20 handicapper and cutting their handicap in half.
Well, that must be so gratifying for you as a training professional with Golf Tech. You must have, over the years, had lots of positive feedback from your students thanking you. What is there something that sticks out in your mind from a letter or a gift or the fact they can trash talk their friends? Is there something that sticks out in your mind for that you've got some feedback from one of your students?
It's amazing. I'll get texts almost daily, especially now that we're in golf season, with people saying, hey, I just had a career round. I beat a buddy. I had a hole in one. I had one of my clients the other day who's gone from probably about a 30 handicap. She's now a 13. She had a hole in one in a match at a local club. This was 2 weeks ago, and they had champagne afterward. And to get her photo of her next to the flag holding the ball and the number one up, one of her fingers up, was great. So we put that up on our Wall of Fame board. So texts are probably the most current, but I also remember times when we would have our open houses, and I had asked some of our clients, would you mind getting up in front of the crowd and saying what you like about Golf Tech or your coach? And everybody jumps at the opportunity to get up and speak about their lessons and their relationships that they've built over the years with their coaches. And it's just more than being their coach. It really becomes a relationship. So we're always getting comments. And I think that's what, after 50,000 golf lessons, Colin, that's what keeps making me want to go to work every day, is to help people, because it can be a lot of the same. Hey, you're slicing the ball, you're topping the ball, you're not doing well with your short game. To go to work every day knowing that we're helping people is what makes me tick as a teacher.
It sounds like you get out of bed in the morning and you have the chance to not only build golf swings, but also build community at the same time there, Ty.
Yeah, I think the relationships are what I enjoy the most about what my job entails, and probably wouldn't keep doing it if I didn't love it every day.
Golf Tech's industry-leading game improvement technology is constantly progressing thanks to their in-house innovation group. Golf Tech gives you the tools and technology to succeed that is delivered through passionate, dedicated coaches like Ty Walker. Here's a fun fact. Golf Tech's customer feedback data shows that the average student sees a 7-stroke improvement in their game. 7 strokes. That's one way to ensure making golf more fun, and that's by leaving the course with a lower score. So don't forget about Golf Tech's offer to you Mod Golf podcast listeners for $50 off both swing evaluation and Tech Fit custom club fitting, which you can redeem at www.golftech.com/modgolf. So start your Golf Tech journey today at one of their over 200 centers worldwide and start shaving strokes off your game. Golf Tech, great golf starts here. So I want to ask you this, because as an entrepreneur, and I think I know the answer to this one here, but what you do with the new breed of golf, the way you actually approach it, your spin, your secret sauce that other golf instructors don't do, you engage with your audience in a very meaningful way and you grow community. Is that something that's just emerged, or is that something that's been very strategic as far as how you were going to approach this?
You know, it's an interesting question. So I have to rewind the videotape back to when I was doing the Golf Fix, and this individual who was sort of a trainer, if you will, for talent, met with me and he said, Michael, I think what you do is really, really good. And I just want to watch you do what you do. But one of the things that I would suggest that you do is you've got to modify some of the things that you do. And one of them is your breathing techniques. And one of them is the way you speak. You tend to not speak from your diaphragm. You tend to speak from your throat. And so I started watching my stuff. And after watching it for a third time, I'm very uncomfortable. We talked about being the smartest person in the room. I'm very uncomfortable being the smartest person in the room. And I'm not afraid of the light. I just don't need the light. And so sitting there and watching myself is not a comfortable thing for me to do. And what I realized at that point was, is that I'm a flawed human being like every single person. I stutter at times. I don't use proper English at times. I'm dyslexic. I'm ADD. And I hit bad shots. And if people don't like me for that, I'm okay with that. But what I'm going to be is I'm going to be genuine. I'm going to be what I am. I'm going to fail and I'm going to embrace it. And I'm going to say things and I'm going to make mistakes and I'm going to embrace all of them. And as long as my mistakes don't harm anybody, all they may do is harm me, I'm okay with that. And what I found was that everybody else was the exact same way. And people reached out and they said to me, you know, what we love is that you're just an approachable, down-to-earth, normal guy who just happens to be teaching golf on television. And that's really the way I approach it. And so what I found was, by accident, that the way that I do things, people gravitated to. And so what I've also found is, as I do this stuff now in this A New Breed of Golf, what I've found is that I'm going to talk about this word of the day thing that I have done my whole life. How am I going to approach my day? What are the things that am I going to be resilient today, right? Because, I mean, resiliency is an important part of being a successful golfer. It's an important part of being a successful human being. So I need to be resilient and I need to be present. Our word of the day on the radio show this morning was present. I need to be present. I need to be, like you said, I want to turn off all my stuff so I don't get distracted. Well, there's a lot of distractions in the world and the cell phone is one of them. The immediacy of wanting to get something done is another. And you know what? We need to be present. So there are things that what I try to do in A New Breed of Golf is remind people that when I'm coaching people. I'm coaching minds. It's not just a paint by numbers thing. It's, well, how does your mind perceive something? Do you think that the best way to play golf is to hit the ball from left to right or right to left? Do you want to hit it farther? Do you want to hit it more? Everybody's different. And my job when I'm coaching is to make sure that I embrace the fact that everybody's different and applaud their differences and make them proud of their differences. Because we live in a world where we almost want everybody to be the same. It's so funny. We want to be the same, but we want to be different. What I want people to be is I want people to applaud difference and not try to be the same. I don't want you to be the same. I want you to be different. And I want you to ask me to be different. So that when I'm teaching somebody that believes, and this has happened to me, I had a very, very wealthy man come up to me and say, Michael, I don't want to hinge my wrists. I want to hinge my elbows. So he held the golf club in such a way that when he took it back, he couldn't hinge his wrists. He hinged his elbows. And it's a highly effective way of playing golf. I've never taught it. He comes up to me and he says, can you teach me? And I go, I will not be as good a teacher today as I will be tomorrow. I'm going to be a better teacher tomorrow because I'm going to figure out how to make this work. And you bet I would love this opportunity and I will work really hard at making sure that I understand all the different things biomechanically that we need to do in order for you to play better golf that way. And he went from a 15 to a 6, hinging his elbows. And you know what? It worked. And I love the difference. And that's why what I do on A New Breed of Golf is I try to get people to think and applaud and embrace that they are different. And oh, by the way, we're the same in some ways because we need to be reminded of things. We need to be reminded of our great fortune. We need to be reminded of the opportunities that have been presented to us in our lives. And what are the things that we can do in order for us to perform better on a golf course is accept the fact that we're going to hit a bad shot and to not tell yourself that you're a bad person because you hit a bad shot, but rather to embrace the fact that you're a human being and human beings flaw. And so when you flaw, okay, no problem. Let's try to succeed the next time. It's failing forward. It's the experience of not getting what you want. And that's what, to me, this is all about. And so what I try to do is my spin is golf is life. We've said it forever that the game of golf reflects the game of life. Well, why wouldn't you want to teach golf that way? And why wouldn't I want to have a radio show and a broadcast, a video broadcast that embraces that? And what I have found is that as a result of doing that, it's been highly successful.
I just love the lens that you view life through and then that it's projected through what you do through your entrepreneurship and your business. I was speaking this week to some young entrepreneurs and taking what you had just said there, I had also mentioned to them about this idea of failing, but looking at this as, because a lot of them for the first time have never stood up in front of people. So I was talking to them about these ideas of be comfortable being uncomfortable.
That's exactly right.
And you have to learn that and be able to put yourself out there. And I put for some people, just like you touched on in a slightly different way, is you need to realize that we're not perfect. We are flawed, as you said. And if you actually feel trepidation, you feel fear, you feel unease, don't look at that as a weakness. Embrace that because that is part of the human experience. And I can tell you believe that wholeheartedly also.
Absolutely. And look, you know what? The game of life is getting comfortable being uncomfortable. And when you play golf, we all have threshold, right? A gentleman called into the show yesterday. He had broken 80 for the first time. Shot 73, by the way. He broke 80 for the first time.
Wow.
And he talked about how nervous he was and how comfortable he was. And yet he was able to push through and the confidence that gave him in other parts of what he was doing through the course of that day and then the subsequent day after. And you sit there and you think to yourself that the most uncomfortable day for all of us is that first day of a new school when you go in and you don't know anybody at all, and you don't talk to anybody, and you look around and you go into class and you're worried about where you're going to sit. And it happened to me a number of times because I changed schools a lot. And I went to a lot of summer schools, right? Think about just all the academic stuff that I went through. I obviously went through college, but I did 9 different summer schools as I was going through college, 9 different summer schools. And think about all those classes that you go into and that uncomfort that you deal with, right? And then also when your grade is posted on a wall and it says D+, right? Think about how uncomfortable all that is. And yet, when you reflect back upon school, you don't necessarily think about what it was like in first grade, but you think about it, what it was like in sixth grade. And you don't necessarily think about your freshman year in college, but you think about your senior year in college and how comfortable you became in that environment. All that happens is you got comfortable being uncomfortable. And then that uncomfortable situation all of a sudden became a very comfortable environment. And what we have to do in order to break thresholds is get used to being uncomfortable, because eventually it becomes comfortable.
It melts away. It certainly does. And hey, I could talk to you all day, but I know I don't have you all day because you are a very busy, busy man here. So I just want to ask you a few other things. You had talked about with your parents and also your siblings as really, I guess you could say they were your mentors and inspirations.
Absolutely.
As far as giving you that entrepreneurial courage. I did want to talk about this. With entrepreneurism, it is a marathon, not a sprint, with lots of ups, lots of downs along the way. And I've had them, you've had them. And it takes commitment, it takes passion and tenacity to push that rock up the hill. But for a lot of entrepreneurs that I work with, it comes with a price, with the personal and through those personal sacrifices that they make. So, Michael, I wanted to ask you this. How do you balance your life to take care of yourself and also your friends and family to ensure that you don't burn out and you're able to maintain that infectiously high energy level of yours? What do you do to make that happen?
One word, and it's gratitude. I go through life every day thinking about how fortunate I am to be able to do what I'm doing. And there are a lot of people. One of my closest friends has a daughter who had a brain tumor and she's alive. But at age 21, she has a 4th grade level education and has some real issues with her right side. I dated a woman long before I got married who had a daughter who was born blind. Think about all the things that we have been given, all of the things that we're able to do in our lives. And there's an absolute gratefulness that I have every single day.
Right.
That there are problems that I encounter every day, and it's great, right? There are issues that come in every day, and those are great. And what I try to do is I look at people for what they are and not what they aren't. So I love my wife for all the things that she is. She's flawed like everybody else, but I choose not to see that. I'm aware of it, but I don't dwell on it. My kids, the same way. And as I go through my life with that idea of what people are, not what people aren't, and the gratitude that I have for all the things that I have, that allows me also to approach my day with a phenomenal attitude, right? The attitude of gratitude. The other thing is I never go through life and go, what don't I have, right? It's very simple for us to sit there and go, well, that person has a BMW and I don't, because that leads to what I think is the worst of traits, and that is jealousy. I think jealousy is the ugliest of human traits, and jealousy comes about because you lose gratitude. And so for me, I'm always sitting there and looking at the things that I have in my life and constantly amazed by it, rather than going, that person has a private jet and I would love to fly private. I can't believe that I have to fly on JetBlue. You know, my dad always told me when I was younger, he said, there's always somebody smarter and always somebody that's not as smart. There's always somebody faster and somebody slower and somebody stronger and somebody weaker. And you're somewhere in there. Don't ever think you are the man, because there's always somebody that's farther down the line than you are and understands it better than you do. And don't sit there and wail in your and sit in pity, because there's always somebody that's got it worse than you. And so what that just reminded me of as I went through and as I go through my life is, man, what a gift I've been given. this opportunity to not just have life, but to be able to really get deep into life and get the most I can out of it. And that's going to come with bad days and good days, and it's going to come with failures and successes. And let's not jump into too big of a I'm the man or I'm not the man kind of thing. Let's just appreciate what we have. And what that allows me to do is it allows me to have what I think is a phenomenal life. And I'm so grateful for it.
Wow. What an answer. What a response. Thank you for providing that. That was fantastic. I do talk to entrepreneurs, and I've said this myself in certain talks I've had along my entrepreneurial journey about all of us having our own superpowers and maybe knowing what those are and ones we actually would love to have. And I wanted to say with you, thin slicing you here, Michael, I think your superpowers are resilience and tenacity. And now I have to say gratitude or grace also, along with being authentic. I think those three, those are your superpowers of what I can see that you offer the world here. I don't know if you agree with that or other ones that you think that you have also, but I would certainly give you those three.
Well, here's what I would say is one of the things I loved about your presentation when we were out there in Vancouver was the idea of superpowers. And I thought it was fabulous. And I've used it, by the way, since that. One of the things that I've learned from you is the importance of calling that a superpower, because as we look at superpowers, what we think is they give us superpowers. One of the things too, though, is the things that we aren't give us superpowers. So I'll go back to this child that was born blind. And people say this all the time, that when one of your senses doesn't operate, your other senses become more acute. And so it's very easy to say that because this individual couldn't see, she was able to enhance the other parts of the senses. Well, that to me is a superpower. And so when I look at my dyslexia was something that allowed me to develop a superpower. So in effect, the thing that holds us back is the thing that's going to be the superpower. And so I kind of look at superpowers as also the things that might not be what we would love to have. I would love to have been the individual that could go into a room and pass all the tests and get 98s and 100s. I wasn't. But it was that thing that allowed me to continue to pursue and effort the things that I wanted to try to get good at. It was the thing that allowed me to understand that I do have wisdom. Maybe it's not the wisdom that the intellectual space in the academic world would say that's wisdom, but maybe I have a wisdom in another way. And maybe the wisdom that I have in the other space is because of the lack of wisdom that I had in that. And then if that is true, then isn't that in fact a superpower? So I kind of look at all these things that we have are superpowers. And at the same time, we've all been given superpowers. I believe everybody has superpower. And I just think what happens to us is we fall into that space of what we don't have instead of what we do have. And then once we realize that what we have is a superpower, then we're able to look at the things that we don't have and realize that those things are the superpowers as well, because they provide us the opportunity to chase those things that we wish.
I'm so glad you framed that concept in that particular way. And I saw that firsthand last week. I was in Seattle at the USA Games Special Olympics at the golf event. And most of the athletes there participating were either at different levels on the spectrum of autism and Down syndrome. And the parents and all the supporters and even the athletes, I can see, Michael, none of them felt sorry for themselves. None of them looked at what it is they could not do. And in fact, it liberated them. It unleashed this completely different world in this universe of opportunity that all of them are embracing. So I actually saw that kind of manifested firsthand. And you talk about gratitude. I could not express my gratitude of having the privilege of interviewing these athletes and their families. It was incredible.
Let me just jump in here real quickly, Colin, because there's to that point, there's an inspirational speaker named Nick Vujovic. It's a challenging last name to spell, but he has this book that he's written and this presentation that he does. He was born without any arms and without any legs. And his presentation is No Arms, No Legs, No Worries. And it is, and he is, one of the most fantastic individuals to listen to. I am not kidding you. If you get this opportunity, if you haven't heard of him, or if your listeners haven't heard of him, go and just type in No Arms, No Legs, No Worries, Nick V. It'll pop up. Read the book, watch his stuff. I am not kidding you. You will look at this and you will, I mean, if there's anybody that has a right to say, man, I got a bad deal, it would be this guy. He can't walk. He can't hug anybody. He can't hug them. And yet he says, no arms, no legs, no worries. It is powerful. And you saw that firsthand, I am certain, out there last week.
I certainly did. So, hey, in the show notes for our listeners here, so I will actually make the effort. So for Nick V, for that video, I will actually find the link for that. As far as with Maxwell and the books you mentioned, I will actually provide those links also,
right,
along with everything else, that all these golden nuggets that you've provided over the last, gosh, almost hour. So with that, I know we have to wrap up. So I just want to ask you one more thing here before I do let you go. Well, actually, before I ask you this, could you tell us, so everybody knows what you're doing now, can you tell us what you're actually doing with your radio show? And can you tell us what you're doing with Golf Digest?
Yes. So I have a property called New Breed of Golf, which is a radio broadcast on Sirius XM, 8 to 10 in the morning, Monday through Friday as well. I do an instructional program, A New Breed of Golf, that we put out a new episode every Monday. And then on Thursdays, I do something with Golf Digest. I'm the chief digital instructor for Golf Digest. We do a half an hour live show every Thursday from my studio in Connecticut, which we built a studio, and it's an instructional opportunity, and people, we pick a topic and then we open it up for interaction. People send in videos in both platforms, so we're able to help people improve their game. It doesn't cost anything to send the video in, and then we pop it up there and break it down. So I'm doing that. I'm also doing, I have an instructional academy at a public golf course that's co-opted between the city of New York and the Trump organization called Trump Ferry Point, which is a beautiful public golf course that's just outside of New York City. So my academy is over there, and I'm over there a couple of days a week teaching. I also do a lot of motivational speaking and also a lot of things like this podcast and other radio interviews. So I'm doing that as well as writing books and videos. So to your point, for as you well know, Colin, those of us that are ADD, we find ourselves making a lot of work, and I've been able to do that.
Great stuff, Michael. Great stuff. So you've been at this for, we're not going to age ourselves too much, but you've been at this for more than two decades, close to three. Yeah. So I know you'll probably never retire. I don't think I'll ever retire. I think I'll keep doing something that I find interesting. And I still like to believe that the most interesting things that I'm going to work on are still out there. Those are under stones that I have not turned over yet. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on, so we talk about this on the Mod Golf podcast, about the innovation and the future of golf. So what do you think the future in golf and life holds for you? And also your thoughts on where you think the game will be in, let's say, 15 or 20 years from now.
This is a wonderful question, Colin, and something that I encourage people to do this regularly, and not just with golf, but whatever it is that they're doing in their life, try to examine where they think whatever it is they're doing is headed, and how can they get there before everybody else? Because there's a lot of people that don't think about this. I've thought about this a lot. I think that golf instruction has to become more affordable, and it has to move more extensively to a video space, which is one of the reasons why I'm doing what I'm doing inside the studio here. I think that there will be basically an algorithm that will be created. And in effect, what I'm trying to do is, through the use of all the technology, being able to watch a golf club get swung and realize, okay, the toe of the golf club is in the ground, and sometimes it's open, sometimes it's closed. Well, that tells me that individual has too much face rotation in their backswing. So have a pre-recorded breakdown of somebody's golf swing, and there's probably 500 or 600 different things that need to happen. You discuss what's going on, you create a 1 minute drill for somebody, and then what they're able to do in the app is they're able to go into the app, they answer a couple of questions in the app, three questions, they all have ABC answers, they go in, they check all that stuff, and then boom, for 99 cents, they're going to get a tip that's going to help them play better golf. I think that's where that's going to end up going. I think that the future of golf will also be to simulators and indoor environments. Now, right now, you can get a simulator of some sort for $400 or $500, and you can get them for $150,000 and everywhere in between. Where I think the game of golf is going to end up going is, I think there's going to be an online amateur tour, and I think there's going to be an online professional tour, much the same way as poker has done what it's done. So I think that's going to end up happening. There will still be golf on golf courses. There will still be golf instruction in an outdoor environment. I don't think that will ever change, and I think that's great. But I do think that golf courses have to become a little bit more than just golf. So some of the things that my brothers own a golf course down in Richmond, Virginia, some of the things that they're doing at the golf course is they turn their back nine into a biking path, a walking path. They've got yoga classes out there. They use their range as a weekend concert series. So they have concerts on Friday or Saturday nights, and they open up the range itself where the balls land for all the people to come out, throw down a blanket, have a picnic, do whatever, and watch somebody present. There's a lot of different things that are going on, but I think what we have to start to do is we have to start to look at golf courses as parks, not as golf courses. And I do think that there will be a move away from private golf courses. I think there will be a lot of semi-private or public golf courses. They will be private courses that will go into that arena. And I think by doing that, what you'll be able to do is you'll be able to bring the affordability of golf courses and bring that price down a bit. But I think there's a lot of different things that are going to happen in 15 or 20 years that are really exciting for the game of golf. Top Golf is obviously one of those things. And I think that you'll see a lot more of Top Golf stuff popping up.
Right.
There's a one of them called the Drive Shack, which just opened up in Orlando. So, and I know you're well aware of that stuff and the things that you've tried to do. I see that stuff happening as well. So I think that the game, it won't change fundamentally, but it will change in the different arenas and platforms that it can become, as well as the different individuals that it attracts to the game, which I think is the fun part about the game of golf now is the game of golf is cool. It's a cool sport to play. To me, the game of golf 30 years ago was like playing the violin. And when the violin becomes popular or did become popular, and I think it was Devo that was doing that stuff and ELO was doing that stuff, playing the violin became a little bit more popular. It isn't that way now.
Yep.
But point being, the game of golf was that. Now, the game of golf is like playing the guitar, mm-hmm. and it's changed. And cool people are playing it, and our heroes and our athletes are playing the sport, and it's fabulous. And I think the future of golf is very, very bright.
Well, I certainly did not stump you on that question. Obviously, you spent a lot of time thinking very deeply about this, and you articulated that very, very nicely in that answer. So thank you for that. So, hey, before I let you go here, how can my listeners find out more about what you do and New Breed of Golf? What's the easiest way that they can find all the great things you're doing?
Yeah, they can go to michaelbreed.com. They can also send an email to me at anewbreedofgolf@michaelbreed.com, and they can sign up for our newsletter, which we send out once a month. It's not a newsletter that is going to come into your mailbox, and it's not going to be a 30-minute read, and it's not going to be a heavy read. There's going to be some instructional stuff in there, and there's also going to be updates of all the different things that I'm doing, places that I'm speaking, all kinds of different stuff. So by going to the website, you'll get a look in at what's going on and then signing up for the newsletter as well. And then obviously they can join me on Golf Digest or on Sirius XM.
Great stuff. And I will say with your newsletter, I do subscribe to that, and you struck that perfect balance there, Michael. And believe me, I'm sure you get it too. You subscribe to things and they just hit you with way too much, way too often. And then you're fatigued and you'll unsubscribe.
Yeah.
And you will. But you've struck that balance. You do a nice job of it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that send it out once a week or once every day, and it's just too much. And I want people to be able to get a quick read. It's a 5-minute read. You get in there, there's things that you're not going to be interested in. There's things that you are going to be interested in. And what we also do is we also include some of the interviews that we have on Sirius XM with some of the more influential people.
Very nice.
The influencers of not just golf, but of life. So it's fun.
Good stuff. Well, Michael Breed, the host and creator of The New Breed of Golf, you tick all the boxes and fit into all the buckets here of what we talk about between being an influencer, disruptor, entrepreneur, innovative. You are the real deal. And you talked earlier about gratitude. I, again, want to express my gratitude for you taking the time out of your hectic schedule to spend this hour with me today on the Mod Golf Podcast. Michael, thank you very much. And I look forward to seeing you again in person very soon. I think our paths will cross again sooner than we think.
And you know what, Colin? I would echo the same thing for you. I think what you're doing is really fun. It was great meeting you. It's been great being able to see the things that you're doing and continue to do it. There's a lot of people out there that are enjoying the stuff that you're doing and continue the passion. I know you've got a lot of it, and I know you are a disruptor as well. And I think it's fabulous. So congrats on all the things that you've got going on. Well done.
I appreciate that, Michael, very much.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to let you go. You take care, and we'll talk to each other very, very soon.
I look forward to it, Colin. Thank you.
With Michael's incredibly busy schedule, it did take a couple months for us to find time for him to squeeze this in, and I want to thank him for doing this right after he spent 2 hours hosting his own radio show. With me being on the West Coast and Michael being back East, I had to get up early for our conversation. But no caffeine was required to get me going for this one, as Michael's infectious, unrelenting energy level is the equivalent of a triple shot of espresso. Michael's story of transforming personal hurdles like dyslexia and sport injuries into the superpowers that define him is truly inspirational. His genuine desire to embrace his shortcomings while demonstrating gratitude, patience, resilience, and curiosity has helped pave the path for his entrepreneurial journey. As I promised earlier, you can find in the show notes links to John Maxwell's Thinking for a Change and Nick Vujovic's inspiring video, No Arms, No Legs, No Worries. Before we go, I want to thank our Season 4 sponsor partners. We are proud to have Golf Tech as our title sponsor, along with supporting sponsors Fairway IQ, British Columbia Golf, and NextLinks. Without their generous support, the Mod Golf Podcast would not be able to bring you these unique golf innovation stories. If you enjoyed my conversation with Michael, you can find more of our golf innovation stories on previous episodes at www.mod.golf or search Mod Golf Podcast on iTunes. And please rate, review, and subscribe to the show while you're there. Join us next week when I speak with Tammy Fuji and Diane Salich, co-founders of Kinona, a recently launched designer brand that responds to the lifestyle desires of the fast-growing women's golf apparel market. I'm your host, Colin Weston. Thanks so much for joining me. Bye for now.